everyone. Thank you for the introduction. I'm going to be presenting some exciting data from my PhD research. Again, it's entitled Potassium Fertilization Affects Psychrophilic Pathogen Susceptibility of Annual Bluegrass. Now, when I say psychrophilic pathogens, I mean cold-loving pathogens, pink snow mold and gray snow mold, which are two important winter pathogens at high latitudes. And here they are occurring together on a golf course in Maine at the bottom here. Now, these two pathogens, we did some field trials in Ithaca involving potassium fertilization, and we saw some sort of casual observations that increased potassium fertilization increased disease severity. So the main purpose of this study was to evaluate the effect of K on snow mold in a more controlled environment. And if there was a difference in disease severity at high K, or if K was affecting disease, we hypothesized that it was due to a potassium effect on plant metabolism during the winter. And I won't go over that data in this presentation, but that's an important component of this whole experiment. So I want to introduce this illustration here. This will be at the top of each of the method slides. And what it is just a timeline that works us through this multi-step experiment. And the specific section that I'll be discussing in detail will be highlighted as we move from establishment all the way through to inoculation and to the early spring or incubation period. So 245 experimental units were established in 10 by 30 centimeter PVC columns, and it was in sand culture. This 245 experimental units represents 8 replicates of 5K levels by 3 fungi levels. Those are pink snow mold, gray snow mold, and an uninoculated control. That represents 120 total experimental units. Alongside those experimental units was another 125 that were analyzed for tissue K content as well as for different metabolic analyses that I won't discuss today. And that represents 5 replicates by 5 K levels and 5 sampling dates. Every week, these experimental units were randomized. They were fertilized identically throughout this establishment period, and they were clipped and irrigated to saturation. After 90 days of establishment to uniformity, we started to impose different potassium levels. And the 5 potassium levels were 0, 0.25, 0.5, 2, and 3 grams per meter squared per 7 days. Now, these potassium treatments were also imposed for 90 days, and all other plant essential nutrients were included in the fertilizer. So the first two periods of this experiment were conducted in a greenhouse. And the last 3 phases of this experiment I'll talk about were conducted in a low temperature refrigerated reefer car. The first step was the hardening phase. And in this phase, all the plants were brought into the reefer. They were maintained under a photon flux density of 300 micromoles per meter squared per second. And over a 4-week period, the day-night temperatures were incrementally decreased from a high of 10 degrees C for a daytime high to a low of -2. And this was this temperature regime was imposed in order to simulate sort of a transition period at a northern latitude going into the month of December and early January. After the hardening period, the plants were maintained under darkness and under snow cover to prevent desiccation. And the reefer was maintained at a constant -4 degrees Celsius. Following midwinter, the plants that were involved in the disease portion of the study were inoculated. And they were inoculated either with potato dextrose auger that had been infected with either pink snow mold, gray snow mold, or a sterile auger control. And a 8-millimeter core was applied to the center of each pot. Now, the next phase after incubation was, or I'm sorry, after inoculation was the incubation of these experimental units under conditions that would be considered early spring or conditions that would prevail underneath a snow cover. So for 45 days, these plants were maintained at 2 degrees Celsius under misting, and then another 45 days at 4 degrees Celsius under misting. And the purpose of this regime was to provide a low temperature, high humidity environment that would promote the growth of these pathogens. In terms of data collection, the disease analysis portion of the experiment, plants were photographed every 10 days, and the area of symptomatic turf grass was rated visually and using SigmaScan image analysis software. For the nutrient and metabolite analyses, 5 replicates of each caliber were harvested following each experimental phase. And again, I'll mention the nutrient component, the potassium tissue content component, but not the metabolism component. And we'll start with the results for potassium tissue content. And what was really a great initial success was we were able to establish a nice range of potassium tissue content concentrations in this turf grass tissue. On the y-axis, you'll see tissue content in grams per kilogram. On the x-axis, you'll see the stage of experiment preceding the harvest. So these tissues were harvested at the end of each one of these mentioned periods of the experiment. And you'll see at establishment, there were no significant differences in tissue content. And very quickly, we were able to achieve this spread. Another interesting thing about the spread in tissue K content is it straddled this 15 grams per kilogram line, which is often considered the level of sufficiency. And this was really an early success because a lot of times it can be really difficult to establish these ranges in potassium tissue content. One other thing I'd like to point out is this Roy G. Biv color scheme that corresponds to K application rate. These colors will be conserved throughout the rest of the experiment, or the rest of this presentation. So keep that in mind when you're looking at bars and data points. For disease data, we chose to evaluate survival analysis of days to 50% necrosis. And now days to 50% necrosis was chosen as a valuable parameter for several reasons. One, day 50 or response 50 is a common evaluative parameter in science. LD50 for the lethal dose, LT50, lethal killing temperature for 50%. So it's not unprecedented to use a sort of response 50 threshold. Second, snow molds are threshold diseases. They require X days of certain environmental conditions in order to manifest. So it seemed like it was an appropriate measure of disease progression or severity. And third, and perhaps most significant, post-infection recovery was severely compromised in experimental units that were more than 50% infected. And I don't present the infection recovery data in this presentation, but they were maintained in a greenhouse after the progression of the disease to watch recovery, and those that were more than 50% infected did not recover very well. In terms of the statistical analysis of the disease data, the first step was a Cox proportional hazard analysis of day 50. And what this allowed us to do is evaluate several of the independent variables, including all the interactive terms. The second step was to perform Kaplan-Meier survival analysis. And in Kaplan-Meier analysis, it doesn't allow you to enter multiple variables. So that's why we started with the Cox proportional hazard to evaluate trial effects and interactions. And then we moved on to Kaplan-Meier analysis to generate mean survival data. For the Cox proportional hazard data, the most important things to take away from this table are that potassium was a significant source, as well as fungus, and fungus meaning gray snow mold, pink snow mold, or uninoculated. Excuse me, the uninoculated data was not included in this analysis. This fungus with 1 degree of freedom represents either plants infected with pink snow mold or gray snow mold, and you'll see that fungus difference as we move forward. But again, trial was not a significant contributor or any interaction terms. So the conclusion, the Kaplan-Meier analysis can be conducted on pooled data across 2 trials that this experiment was conducted. So first I'll start with the day 50 analysis of pink snow mold. And this is a photograph from the experiment that illustrates that we were able to achieve disease successfully. And really the experiment worked very well with that regard in creating the environmental conditions that were needed to develop disease. So on the y-axis of this figure is days to 50% necrosis, or day 50. On the x-axis is the weekly K application rate with that conserved color scheme. And the p-value in the top right corner is it's an analysis of whether or not the survival means for these treatments were significantly different. And in this case, they were not significantly different. One thing you will notice for pink snow mold, however, is that the highest day 50, or the slowest progression of disease, was observed in the 0K application plots. And the lowest day 50, or the highest rate of progression of disease, was observed in the highest K level. And that'll become more important when we look at gray snow mold. If this data is modeled in a somewhat different way, where we regress tissue K content, gram per kilogram, at the time of inoculation versus days to 50% necrosis, you'll see a linear trend develop with a p-value of 0.08. And what this is, again, kind of showing in a different way than in the last figure, was that there seems to be a negative correlation between tissue K content and day 50, or increased rate of disease development at higher K rates. For gray snow mold, the red arrow here is indicating a sclerotia that developed in this tissue. We see a more striking trend in the data, where there is a highly significant treatment effect on days to 50% necrosis versus weekly K application rate. Now, again, if this data is examined as a function of tissue K content and days to 50% necrosis, we see this really striking linear trend of decreasing day 50 with increasing K tissue content corresponding to increased K fertilization. So in summary, there's a strong association between disease progression and tissue K content, particularly with Typhila incarnata, with gray snow mold. And we're wondering if this is a function of virulence. Pink snow mold develops more rapidly. It has a much broader range of conditions that are favorable to its development. So we're wondering if this potassium treatment effect is more significant with diseases that are less aggressive or less virulent. And in terms of potential mechanisms, we have some data that suggests that K fertilization is affecting carbon metabolism of these plants. And I'm presenting a poster this afternoon, 76-21, so to plug my own poster, come see my metabolism data. And I'll take any questions now. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Could you explain the turf in the columns, this soil type or not?
Yeah, it was a sand. It was over 98% sand, and they were seeded 40 seeds per pot of annual bluegrass into each cylinder.
Was it a calcareous sand or a silica-based sand? You know.
The question was it a, first question. Sorry, was how I established these plants in the sand columns, and the second was whether it was a calcareous sand or not. No, it was not a calcareous sand. The pH was 6.7. Yes?
Did your potassium levels seem to impact the growth or lushness of the turf?
The question is, did the potassium content seem to affect the growth or lushness of the turf? There were no... I also took DGCI, dark green color index ratings of this turf, and there were no visual differences in turf grass performance, either measured through DGCI or just casual observation. And there, I didn't take clipping yields because they were clipped by hand, and that introduced a whole another level of error, but there were no obvious differences in growth rate of these plants. Yes, sir.
Is there any reason to believe that the same association you found would be true with, say, creeping bankcrest?
The question is, do I have any inclination that the same trends would exist for creeping bankcrest? That's an excellent question, and I think yes. The metabolite data that I'm going to present on my poster this afternoon, it seems that the function, what's happening is potassium is dominating in the vacuole, and the plant metabolic response is that it's diverting carbon resources into the vacuole as organic acid anions to balance the effect of taking up all these cations. So I think that sort of effect would be universal in the sense that because it's an ionic effect, it's not a, I would think that would apply to multiple species of turf grasses. Dr. Slosberg.
What was your potassium source used and why?
The question was, what is the potassium source used and why? The potassium source used was potassium chloride. And the reason why potassium chloride was used is because whenever you apply, you know, one fertilizer source at a different rate than any others, there's going to be one counter anion that is also going to apply at a different rate. And we chose to use potassium chloride because we did not want to, we wanted to use chloride as that counter anion rather than sulfate. Yes, sir, in the back.
I was wondering if you were considering taking additional thresholds, like maybe 5 or 25% of this viable analysis to see if there's differences in the dynamics versus early in the disease.
Right, the question was sort of taking different data threshold values. And I have looked at the data at 30, 50, 60. It is fairly well conserved right through. I think I've only checked between 30 and 70%, but the trends in the data are conserved through several different threshold parameters. And again, that day 50 was chosen because of the delayed recovery, mostly.
Okay. That's all the time that we have. Let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.